I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is August 31st, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape.
0 milliseconds.
That's the 99th percentile latency someone is claiming for autocomplete across 240 million domain names. Not the average, the tail. The slowest 1 in 100 requests, returning results in no perceptible time at all. Now there's an asterisk on that number. There always is. And that asterisk is where the real engineering lives. Because zero isn't a measurement. It's a design decision. It tells you that somewhere in this system, a hard problem got moved. Pre-computed. Pushed to the edge. Traded away for something else. So today, we follow the asterisk. We look at how you make search feel instant across a dataset this large. What it costs, and what zero is quietly hiding.
The front page.
This is Link with the front page, your rapid-fire briefing on the signals worth tracking today. 4 stories, and by the end, you'll see one pattern connecting them. Story 1, an update for returning listeners. Yesterday, we flagged the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope for a piece of concealed hardware, a coronagraph, capable of directly imaging Earth-like exoplanets. That was the pre-launch feature. Here's what's new. It flew. Roman is off the pad and beginning a 3-month, 1-million-mile transit to L2, the second Sun-Earth Lagrange point, out beyond the moon. That gravitational parking spot is where you put an infrared observatory when you want a stable, cold, unobstructed view of the sky. And the specs are the real story here. A 300-megapixel infrared camera, a field of view 100 times larger than Hubble's, and a survey speed roughly 1,000 times faster. Roman isn't looking deeper than Hubble. It's looking wider, faster. That's the machine you build to map dark matter in 3 dimensions and trace how dark energy stretched the universe over time. The instrument we discussed yesterday is now in transit to actually use it. Story 2. From the sky to the ground, and Elon Musk's answer to the power problem. Because the bottleneck for AI, that's artificial intelligence, isn't chips anymore. It's electricity. Data centers can't connect to the grid fast enough. So operators are bolting portable natural gas turbines to the ground to bypass the weight. That created a run on jet engine turbines, and the hardest part to manufacture is the turbine blade. These blades survive extreme heat and force, and a single batch can take 60 to 90 weeks to produce. The queue now stretches toward 2030, so SpaceX is bringing blade and vane casting in-house. Musk claims it cuts delivery times by 18 months, and read the pattern here. A rocket company already casts precision high-temperature alloys for engines. Turbine blades are adjacent expertise. This is vertical integration aimed squarely at the one resource AI can't fake its way around. Power. Signal, not noise. Story 3. Shifting gears to a sharp one for the security-minded. Cube's OS published Security Bulletin 118. Arbitrary code execution in DOM 0, the most privileged domain in the system. And the flaw lives in an unexpected place. The error reporting path of the copy to VM tool. Here's the mechanism. When you copy a file from DOM 0 into a cube, the target sends back a confirmation, including the name of the last received file. If that cube is compromised, it controls that file name. DOM 0 passes it into a system call to display an error dialog. The sanitizer strips control characters and quotes, but the reporting still routes untrusted input into a shell context. Malicious file name becomes injected command. The lesson? The trust boundary wasn't the file transfer. It was the error message. Back channels are where isolation quietly leaks. Patches out, update normally. Story 4. And here we come back to AI, this time at the edge. Local AI gets an agent that recovers. Meta released Muse Glimmer 30B under Apache 2.0. Dense model, roughly 29.6 billion parameters, plus a separate vision encoder. It runs on a single 32GB consumer GPU. The clever part is architectural. 32 query heads paired with just 2 key value heads, and a 3-to-1 ratio of local to global attention. Translation, the key value cache costs about 52 kibibytes per token, well under its rivals. That lean cache is what keeps 131,000 token context resident on the card, which is exactly what an agent needs when it's chewing through tool results for an hour. But the real headline isn't the benchmark. It's that this model was trained to recover from its own failed tool calls. Small models call the wrong tool. Mid-size models panic when one errors. Glimmer was built around the loop, not the chat. That's the difference between a chatbot with a to-do list and an actual agent. So here's the through line today. Two of these stories are about the same constraint from opposite ends. Musk is casting turbine blades because AI needs power at the data center. Meta is trimming key-value caches so capable agents fit on one card. AI efficiency at the edge. The industry is squeezing the same bottleneck from both directions. That's the front page. Precision over hype. The deep dive. The diffusion comeback. Here's something you don't see often in machine learning. An idea that was declared dead, quietly coming back to life. For the past few years, if you wanted to generate text, the answer was simple. Autoregressive models. Predict the next token, then the next, then the next. One word at a time, left to right. It's the engine behind every large language model you've used. And it works so well that most people stopped asking whether there was another way. But there's a small group of researchers who never stopped asking. And in 2026, they're getting louder. The topic is continuous diffusion language models. And the question worth sitting with today is not just how they work, but why the tide is turning back toward them now. Let me set up why this matters. Then we'll go under the hood. The core tension. Autoregressive generation is sequential by design. To write the 10th word, the model must first commit to the first 9. This is elegant. It decomposes an impossibly hard problem. Generate a coherent paragraph into a chain of small, identical subproblems. Predict one token, given the ones before it. The transformer architecture makes this trainable at massive scale, because during training, you can process every position in parallel using a trick called teacher forcing. You show the model the correct previous tokens and ask it to predict the next. But that sequential commitment is also the weakness. Once the model writes a word, it can't take it back. If it makes an early mistake, that mistake becomes context for everything that follows. Researchers call this exposure bias. And left-to-right generation is awkward for tasks like infilling, where you know the beginning and the end, and you need to write the middle. Diffusion offers a fundamentally different bargain. How diffusion actually works. Now, diffusion came from image generation, so let's start there. It's the cleanest way to build intuition. Imagine you take a photograph and slowly add random noise to it. A little grain, then more, until eventually the image is pure static, no signal left. That's the forward process. It's mechanical, it requires no learning, and it always destroys information in the same predictable way. Now here's the clever part. You train a neural network to run that process backwards. Show it a slightly noisy image, and ask it to predict a slightly cleaner one. Do this across every noise level, from near static to near perfect. Once trained, you can start from pure random noise, and step by step the model removes noise until a coherent image emerges from nothing. The key insight is this. Producing something complex in one shot is hard. Producing it through many small refinement steps is far easier. Each step only has to make things a little bit better. Now, here's the challenge. Images are continuous. A pixel's brightness is a real number, and you can add a pinch of Gaussian noise to it smoothly. But language is discrete. A token is either cat or dog. There's no halfway point. You can't add a little bit of noise to the word cat and get something 10% noisier. This is the wall the field hit, and it's exactly where the two philosophies split. Discrete versus continuous. The first workable answer around 2021 was discrete diffusion. Instead of adding Gaussian noise, you corrupt text by randomly masking tokens, replacing words with a blank placeholder. The forward process gradually masks more and more of the sentence until it's entirely blanks. The reverse process learns to fill those blanks back in, all at once, refining its guesses over multiple steps. This masking approach became the dominant path, and by 2024, it reached quality competitive with autoregressive models. By 2026, you have real products. Releases like Mercury from Inception Labs, shipping as genuine diffusion-based language models. But there was an older, more ambitious idea that got largely abandoned. Continuous diffusion for language. The plan there is bolder. Take your discrete tokens and map them into a continuous space, embeddings, vectors of real numbers. Now you're back on familiar ground. You can add smooth Gaussian noise, exactly like images. You run the whole elegant, well-understood continuous diffusion machinery. And only at the very end do you snap those continuous vectors back to actual discrete words. For a few years, this approach lost. Discrete masking was simpler and worked better. So why the comeback? Why now? This is the pattern worth noticing. It's rarely one breakthrough. It's an accumulation of smaller advances that quietly shift the balance. The continuous approach carries a real theoretical prize. In continuous space, you inherit the entire mature toolbox that made image diffusion so powerful. The samplers, the noise schedules, the guidance techniques, the deep understanding of how these systems behave. Discrete diffusion had to reinvent much of that from scratch, and the math is messier. If you can make language live in continuous space, you get to borrow decades of momentum from the image and video world. There's also a deeper draw. Continuous representations are naturally soft. A model can hold a superposition of possibilities and gradually resolve it, rather than committing hard to one token per step. That's a better fit for the way meaning is often ambiguous until context pins it down. And what's changed is that the practical obstacles are eroding. Better ways to bridge the continuous embedding space and the discrete token space. Better handling of variable length output. A genuinely hard problem, because unlike an image with fixed dimensions, you don't know in advance how many words your answer needs. And crucially, the broader diffusion ecosystem has matured to the point where importing its techniques actually pays off. What actually changes? Let's be precise about the stakes, because this is where hype tends to creep in. The most concrete advantage is the speed-quality trade-off. With diffusion, you choose your number of refinement steps at generation time. Fewer steps, faster output, lower quality. More steps, slower, better. Autoregressive models don't give you that dial in the same way. The cost is roughly fixed by the length of what you generate. That flexibility matters enormously for deployment, where you're constantly balancing latency against quality. The second is bidirectional context. Every refinement step in a diffusion model can attend to the entire sequence, what comes after, as well as what comes before. That makes infilling, editing, and constrained generation feel native rather than bolted on. And the third is error correction. Because the model revisits the whole sequence repeatedly, a mistake in step 3 can be fixed in step 7. There's no irreversible commitment. But I want to be honest about the other side. Autoregressive models have an enormous head start. Years of scaling, infrastructure, and tooling all optimized around them. Diffusion language models are competitive, and competitive is doing real work in that sentence. Matching quality is the entry ticket, not a victory. The ecosystem view. Here's the connection I find most interesting. For years, the field ran on a clean division of labor. Continuous data, images, audio, video, belong to diffusion. Discrete data, text, code, belong to autoregression. Two paradigms, two territories, a neat border between them. What we're watching is that border dissolve. If continuous diffusion for language succeeds, then the same fundamental machine, iterative denoising in a continuous space, generates your pictures, your video, and your text. One architecture family, one set of techniques, one body of theory, spanning every modality. That's the real signal underneath the research flurry. Not that autoregression is doomed, it isn't, but that the assumption of separate tools for separate data types was never a law of nature. It was a practical compromise. And practical compromises are exactly the things that get renegotiated when the surrounding technology matures. The lesson for builders is a familiar one, and it's why I keep coming back to it. An idea being abandoned rarely means it was wrong. Often it just means it was early. The researchers who kept working on continuous diffusion through the quiet years weren't chasing a dead end. They were waiting for the rest of the field to catch up to their bet. So watch this space. Not because it's certain to win, but because the fact that it's back in the conversation at all tells you something about where the ground is shifting. This has been The Deep Dive. I'm Link. Thanks for thinking it through with me. The neural network I'm watching, SuperVision, quietly disappear from software work, and I want to talk about where it's going. Here's the pattern. This week, four separate data points, and they all point at the same architectural shift. Not towards smarter automation, toward unsupervised automation. The human is moving from inside the loop to on top of it. Start with the clearest signal. Amazon just open-sourced something called Kiro Crew, a system for running multiple AI coding agents across sessions and tasks. And the pitch from the engineers who built it is almost startlingly honest. They wanted, in their words, a way to kick off a task, walk away, come back to something worth reviewing. Read that again. The unit of work is no longer a prompt you babysit. It's a task you delegate, and then leave. And this matters because it inverts the interaction model. For the last few years, working with an AI agent meant sitting in the loop. Prompt, wait, correct, prompt again. Synchronous, attention bound. Kiro Crew is asynchronous by design. Persistent memory across sessions, scheduled jobs, concurrent agents, sub-agents delegating to other sub-agents. Incident investigation, ticket triage, migrations, pull request monitoring, running while you sleep. Now here's the part I find technically interesting, and it's the part that separates this from hype. When you remove the human from continuous supervision, you have to rebuild trust somewhere else. So look at what they actually shipped. An operating system level sandbox. Deny by default commands. Sensitive path blocking. Credential redaction. An assigned audit log of every action. That last one is the tell. When you can't watch the agent work in real time, you replace live supervision with a verifiable record you review afterward. The trust moves from the moment of action to the audit of the action. They also lean on something called the Agent Client Protocol, ACP, feeding an activity view that surfaces each agent's plan, its tool calls, and its approval gates as they happen. So supervision doesn't vanish entirely. It gets sampled. You're not watching every keystroke. You're reviewing a plan, approving a gate, reading a log. Human on the loop, not human in the loop. Hold that idea, because the second data point extends it into an unexpected domain. Debian, one of the most conservative process-heavy communities in open source, voted to let contributors code with AI assistance. And notice the framing they landed on. Disclosure optional, quality mandatory. That's a profound statement about where governance is heading. They stopped policing the method and started policing the output. The project doesn't care how the patch was made. It cares whether the patch is correct. Same shift. Supervision moved from the process to the result. Third point, and this is where it gets physical. Meta is testing robots inside its data centers. A Kinova robotic arm evaluated for power cycling servers, another bot swapping network cables, and my favorite detail, a robot that's essentially a pointy finger that presses the power button on a Mac Mini when a human remotely asks it to. It's almost comically simple, but that's exactly why it's a signal. The physical layer of infrastructure is getting the same treatment as the software layer. A remote human, an asynchronous trigger, a machine that acts without someone standing over it. One worker's estimate, up to 80% of certain workloads. We thought those of us doing the physical tasks were safe, but not anymore. So connect the three: coding agents that run while you're away, governance that judges output instead of method, robots that execute physical tasks on remote command. The through line isn't AI is getting better. It's that we are systematically removing the requirement for continuous human presence and rebuilding assurance through logs, gates, and quality checks instead. Now the fourth point looks like an outlier. VMware, losing its 20-year reign over virtualization as Broadcom narrows its focus to 30,000 customers and pushes everyone toward one expensive bundle. Feels like a business story, but look at why it belongs here. Broadcom is forcing a decision about who controls the infrastructure layer, and tens of thousands of organizations are responding by pulling workloads back onto platforms they own. And what did the Kiro Crew engineers emphasize? That it can run locally, or on infrastructure the developer controls, because it had to meet their internal security requirements. That's the connection. If you're going to let agents act unsupervised, if you're going to trust the audit log instead of your own eyes, then where that log lives and who controls the sandbox becomes the whole game. Autonomy raises the stakes on ownership. The more you delegate, the more the substrate matters. So here's what I'm actually seeing across these four points. The industry is trading synchronous control for asynchronous trust. And trust, in engineering terms, isn't a feeling. It's an architecture. Sandboxes, signed logs, approval gates, quality checks over method checks, infrastructure you can point to. The open question I'm sitting with, the one nobody has answered yet, is what happens to review capacity. Kiro Crew's own users are already flagging it. The agents burn through tokens fast, and they generate work faster than you can walk away from it. When you can launch 50 tasks in parallel, reviewing the results becomes the new bottleneck. We've automated the doing. We have not automated the judging. And judgment is precisely what we said we'd keep for ourselves. That's the tension worth watching. Not whether the agents can act without us, they clearly can, but whether we can review as fast as we can delegate. I'll be tracking it. This has been the Neural Network. I'm Link. The system output time for the optimization of the week. And this one is for anyone who has ever tried to build a scheduling view and watch their interface crawl to a halt. The tool is FlexGantFX, a resource scheduling framework for generating Gantt charts, just open-sourced by Dirk Lemmerman after 15 years of commercial development. Here is why it earns the slot. Most charting libraries render every bar, every label, every grid line as its own node in the scene graph. Push that to thousands of activities, and the layout engine buckles. FlexGantFX takes a different path. It mixes canvas rendering with standard JavaFX nodes. The chart body draws itself as a single canvas surface, so the framework skips, reapplying the full visual effects to every individual element. That is the whole trick to hitting acceptable render speeds on complex charts. Paint the dense part once, reserve real nodes for the parts that need interaction. And the data model is where it gets interesting for builders. Four primitives. Rows form a tree of your resources. Activities are time-bounded items sitting on a row. Layers group those activities and control Z order and visibility. And links express dependencies between activities. Time itself is modeled with java.time.instant throughout, which means time zones, daylight saving transitions, weekends, and working hours are part of the model, not display settings you bolt on afterward. That is the correct architecture. Editing is direct manipulation, with constraint hooks, so your own rules decide which moves are legal. Now, the integration caveat, and this matters. The library ships under AGPL, the Affero General Public License. If you modify it and serve it over a network, you must publish your source, even without redistributing a binary. For an internal tool or an open project, that is a non-issue. For a closed-source SaaS product, read the license first, or budget for a commercial one. Lemmerman chose AGPL deliberately. The same play iText, and for a time, MongoDB made. It is a maintenance and dual licensing strategy, not an accident. So if you build on the JVM, and you need serious scheduling visualization, clone the repo, run the bundle demos, and study that Canvas plus nodes pattern. Even the rendering strategy alone is worth the read. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.